We do have a very special caller on the phone, calling in from New Orleans from the Common Ground Collective. Hello, Maya.
Hello.
You're on Free Radio.
So, hey, Bradley.
Hello, Maya. This is Jen.
Hey, Jen.
So Maya's calling in from New Orleans. Why don't you just give us a little bit of information on what you've been up to?
Yeah, well, me and four other folks from Santa Cruz have been down here since the last week. We've spent the last couple days encased in hazardous material suits and respirators and, you know, gloves and boots, pretty much looking like astronauts, going into houses that had been pretty much submerged in toxic flood water. You can see, like, where the National Guard had been inspecting each house, and they spray-painted TFW on the front. It means toxic flood water. And so now that they have been draining out, we've been going into various community members' homes and basically stripping them, stripping out all of the stuff from inside, all of the mold and sodden carpets, and then pretty much stripping it down to the base structural elements. Like, we knock out the plaster, the drywall, take out everything, just strip it down to the skeleton so that it can be disinfected. It's really hard work, and I was just kind of feeling today that it's pretty much the only situation I've ever actually been in where I can truly understand that phrase, the urge to destruction is a creative urge, because we've just been kind of deconstructing these houses. But I guess to me it feels like an act of hope instead of an act of destruction, because this area, you know, people keep saying, well, is anyone going to come back? Is it just going to be razed? And I think the fact that people are trickling back in, people who have lived here for generations, and saying, no, I'm not going to give up on this house, you know, we're holding on, we're rebuilding.
What neighborhood are you exactly in?
This is in the 9th Ward. And that is one of the lowest areas of the city. It's right in between the Mississippi River and Lake Pontchartrain, and so when the levees broke, it's basically below sea level, so it just was like, people were talking about 20-foot storm surges coming through, and then a good, like, 15, 20 feet of water. You can see the water line on the houses, and most of them are raised up on cinder blocks anyway, because people know to build for floods, and the water line on the houses is pretty close up to the ceiling. And so the walls pretty much under that are, like, you know, dark with mold. I've never seen so many different kinds of mold flourishing.
Are the residents around while you're cleaning the houses?
Sometimes. Like, the man whose house that we've been working on for the past couple days was around yesterday, and he wasn't here today because he was at a relative's funeral, but he's going to be here around tomorrow. And that's been really wonderful to have him around, partly because, it, you know, in a way, it's this odd intimacy. Like, we're going through people's personal stuff, most of which is ruined, but you also find, like, intact family photos and, you know, things that are important to somebody, and putting it aside, saying, like, this is in really bad shape. But, you know, you just don't want to throw something out without making sure that they don't want to keep it. And it's been really great to have him around when he has been here, because he just tells us so much about, you know, his own story and just kind of his knowledge of the community going way back. And then as other people drive by, you know, they hail him because everybody knows everybody, it seems like, and stop and talk to us. So we're learning a lot just from getting to talk to people, just getting to talk to, like, you know, the local residents who have just so much to say, so much local history and their political views. And it's been really gratifying to be able to talk personally with them.
Do you know if a lot of the residents are going to return in that neighborhood, or?
It's really hard to say, and I think it's, I don't know what it would be like percentage-wise, but because some people you talk to are, say, no way, forget it. Others say, we would love to, but it's going to be too late by the time, because things are lagging so much, the city is really making it difficult for people to come back. And so they're in, a lot of them are in Houston or Atlanta. I think, I mean, they're all over the place. There's a lot in San Francisco. There's a few that got sent as far as Alaska. But I think the biggest concentrations are in Houston and Atlanta. And this, one of the men we were talking to yesterday was saying, you know, even people who really, really want to come back, by the time they're able to come back, they're already getting settled. Their kids are in new schools. They've got new jobs. They're, you know, it's just going to be another uprooting from where they are now. And other people really are dead set on coming back. Like, for example, we took part in this really beautiful, inspiring march on Saturday, which was organized by the People's Hurricane Fund. And that is a group, or a coalition, rather, that kind of came together out of a long-standing coalition called Community Labor United. And the people in a lot of the speakers there were really emphasizing that this culture is a culture that we created and is unique in this country, and we're not going to allow it to be destroyed and taken away. And they're dead set on coming back and reclaiming it and rebuilding this very special city and community in according to this unique vision, and not like the generic corporate developer model, which it, you know, could be bought up to do. And we were marching behind this. It was kind of like, you know, the whole stereotype of Mardi Gras with these jazz bands going through the street and people dancing down along behind it. And that's pretty much what happened on Saturday, except that it was this kind of reclamation resistance occasion. And so there was this wonderful music playing, like this band with, like, you know, trumpets and trombones and drums. And then the people were chanting with the music as it went. They were going like, "Ain't no place like home, ain't no place like home." So there was this celebration of, like, you know, we're not, you haven't gotten rid of us.
Where did this march start?
It started at Louis Armstrong Park, and it went across the top and down the side of the French Quarter and back up to City Hall, which is where it ended. And City Hall is just a block or so away from the Superdome, which is where a lot of the evacuees originally were right after the flooding.
Is this part of the march that started in Jackson, Mississippi a few days earlier?
Yeah, it wasn't so much. It was connected to those events. It wasn't like there was a march that came from Jackson to New Orleans. But, yeah, it was coordinated events corresponding with International Human Rights Day.
It was part of the Survivors Assembly and March for Right of Return.
Right, right. And they were really emphasizing right of return and autonomy and self-determination.
We had a caller call in actually before you called up and was talking about the challenge from an architectural standpoint of rebuilding in New Orleans and comparing that to the earthquake that happened in Santa Cruz and the development and how that's taken place. And her concerns were that it takes so long for a community to agree on how the neighborhood should be rebuilt.
Very parallel situation in a way. The way that people talk about pre and post earthquake Santa Cruz, about how a lot of the old unique vibrance of Santa Cruz and its counterculturalness was lost a bit after the earthquake. And I can't speak for that because I wasn't there at that time. But I think it's very parallel in that way, that, like, it, you know, people fear that as it's rebuilt, it's going to lose some of its special flavor. But it's interesting that you bring up architecture, because I had an interesting conversation the day of the march with a couple of people. We were waiting to kind of start the march, and these two people, was like a man and a woman, who said they were from L.A. and were involved with procuring immigrant workers, and they were like, oh, in a legal sense, of course. By the way, as an aside, I'm told that the biggest proportion of humans currently in the city of New Orleans is everyone's vastly outnumbered by undocumented workers who are pretty much getting paid nothing. But that's an aside. So these people who told me they were here to get contracts for immigrant workers were asking me what we were all about, and they seemed to have a really hard time understanding the terms I was talking about, which involve community, self-determination, things like that. And they seemed to have a really hard time grasping as I was saying, well, they were like, well, what are you protesting? What are you complaining about? And I was like, well, the people who are organizing this march really want to rebuild their communities with their own, you know, with their own vision, with their own power, with their own control, and not be sacrificed to the interests of developers and corporate contractors. And she was like, oh, so the people want the architecture to look the same as before? And because I kept saying, no, they want to rebuild their community. They want to rebuild their community. And I'm like, no, it's not so much about the architecture. It's about this really cohesive, exciting culture that's gone back for, it's really tight-knit for generations, and people are upset about that being scattered and lost. Another conversation we had with one of the local residents in the neighborhood where we were gutting the house was a man who was talking about, he's like, no one talks about the value of this city to this country, or the history and the culture of this city to this country. He's like, this is a 300-year-old city. It predates, quote-unquote, America. This is a city that, as a community of free people of color, free blacks, Indians, pirates, resisted the French, the Spanish, and the English long before there was a United States of America. There's nowhere else like this in this country. And that's all what could be lost.
And how can that be preserved?
People's Hurricane Relief members want to preserve it by insisting that control of the revisioning, the reconstruction of the city remain in the hands of those people who created and perpetuate, and a lot of the time either paraphrasing or repeating their words. They're like, we created this culture. We are the perpetuators of this culture. No one can take it from us. We, you know, really demand the right to reinstate it. You know, all the advertising have been like, no, the French Quarter is open for business. New Orleans is up and running. And they're like, we are the reason the French Quarter is up and running for business, you know, but all the money is going to not to allow people to return to get housing while they're waiting for their houses to be livable. They're not seeing FEMA money. They're not seeing Red Cross money. It may be very difficult for people to come back, whereas in these other cities, the welcome mat is being extended much more. And a lot of the money, because the tourism is such a huge part of the city's economy, is gone into getting the French Quarter businesses up and running, getting, they really want Mardi Gras to happen. I'm talking, when I say they here, I mean the city officials. So all of this money is getting put into Mardi Gras to make it happen in the spring, and there's going to be no one living here to have any sort of foundation for this tourist event.
That was the one time that I was in New Orleans, was actually during a Mardi Gras, and it was more in the morning time than it was in the nighttime. That gets mm-hmm. more glamorized as the nighttime in the French Quarter, you know, drinking and partying at all the bars. But it was actually a pretty neat cultural event, I thought, because I saw a lot of youth of color in marching bands, and it was a pretty neat parade.
That's kind of what the people that I've heard from wanted to be. It's like, this is a locally indigenous cultural tradition, which is alive and well, and they don't want to see it become this kind of gimmick, fake tourist event, which is very superficial, which exists to try to bring tourist dollars in back into the city before there's even the community out of which the real celebration emerged. You know, you can't have the you can't have the mask of it, but I know that's like a weird metaphor that, you know, but you can't have the veneer, like the superficial commercialized image of it. You're going to lose that real organic celebration that comes from the culture that was born here. You know, they're doing it as a like last ditch commercial, that we've got to get the tourist dollars back here.
What has the behavior of the police been like? What have you witnessed?
Well, it's been, interestingly enough, that one of the people that we had a really great conversation with was a local NLPD officer who was born and raised in the neighborhood that we were working in, knows the guys, how it is. We had a really great conversation with him. He was very forthright, very forthcoming with us. And my impression of him was very good. That he was talking about, like, we, you know, we asked him about looters and all of those stories that were coming out. And he's like, you know what, back when all that was going on, if people were taking food, supplies, the cops were just standing by and letting him take it. But as soon as people started taking electronics, he's like, don't be an idiot. Your ass is in jail. So look, the NOPD was making distinctions about survival. He said he almost got fired because he was ordered to go and defend, I forget what, some, you know, French Quarter businesses or something. And he's like, no, I'm not going. I have friends and family on their roofs trying to escape floodwater back in the Ninth Ward. I'm going to go back and try to help them. So I think there's a real division between neighborhood cops and cop hierarchy. There's a difference. I don't know. I can't speak for all of them. You know, and that said, like, common ground people have been hassled by cops. I also think that there's a difference between, or not a difference, but like sometimes tensions between the NOPD and state troopers and military police, all of whom have been in the area. And from what I've seen, I guess not surprisingly, the military police are the ones that are the real fuckers. They drive around in their Hummers and just, you know, intimidate people.
Is there a curfew?
There is a curfew. You're not supposed to be out walking around after 8 o'clock. And this isn't the same for all areas of the city, but I know that the area where we're in, after 8, you can't be out on foot. And then certain areas, which I believe the lower Ninth Ward, you are only allowed to be there between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m.
Is there electricity where you are?
There is, but very, very limited. Like, all of blocks and blocks around us is pitch black, no electricity. But I guess, I'm not sure how it works. I guess if you establish some sort of, I don't know what the official process is, but if you establish some sort of residency or get permission or authorization, you can run, they can run electricity to the, like, the community center where we're based at does have electricity, but it's a very low supply. So the whole area really isn't hooked onto the grid right now.
What's the community center called?
You know what? That's a really good question. We just call it the community center, and I think it was just kind of offered to Common Ground to use because no one else is here using it. Common Ground restored it and detoxified it, pretty much the same process that we're doing with all the houses, and we're given the opportunity to use that space.
Was there a safety training that went into the disaster restoration?
You mean for Common Ground volunteers?
Yes.
Well, before any of us goes out to a work site, we're all given an orientation on what to know about safety going into the toxic environment, how to use your safety gear, all the health issues. Yes, everyone's given a training before you go out. And also not only how to go out there and put on your gear, but how to come back and decontaminate it once you get back. And I think the biggest issue is health, because anytime there's a whole bunch of people living in close quarters, it's always, you know, eating together and sleeping all in a big room on the floor. There's always health issues, but especially when we're all, you know, bringing back mold spores and weird toxins. We don't know what all was in the water. Like, I got splashed in the face with the TSW, the toxic flood water, today when I was trying to take carpets out of a house. They were still saturated, and I got splashed in the face. And after that, my face started to sting. So I don't think anybody knows what all we're being exposed to. So we're just trying to all be really, really careful about sanitation.
Did you go to a doctor?
Well, there's a clinic. There's a free clinic in Algiers, which is also related to Common Grounds. It's kind of separate from this house restoration project, but it's also a Common Grounds collective project. And there's a lot of back and forth between the two. Like, they came up yesterday, a few people from the clinic, bringing tetanus shots and hepatitis, hep A shots, and a lot of herbs. And they are planning to come back tonight. So there's a lot of feedback and communication about what kind of health issues are going on. So I haven't talked to them yet, but I'm gonna probably talk to them this evening if it's still singing. There's another little building called the House of Excellence, which cracks me up. But that originally was like a school. Did a lot of kids programs, and that's now a free internet service available for the community to use, and it's the office for a lot of the Common Ground projects. And there's also a women's center and distribution center a couple blocks from here, which we've set up, and they're going to be setting up more distribution centers as well, where people can come and get food, clothes, medical supplies. There's a tool library where people could come and take things to use, because, you know, a lot of people are working on their own houses as well. It just seems like there's always more, some people want to set up a preschool. There's always more. There's a newspaper, a community newspaper that's in process of getting underway. So new projects keep springing up. A garden, a community garden, which was existing garden long before this, but it has also been pretty trashed and is being restored. And all of that is scattered around in this area.
Is the project Free Radio Algiers, is that working with WTUO?
Yeah, that's a really
right
interesting thing, because Radio Algiers, originally they were just putting it out as a web stream. And then from what I understand, someone pirated a bandwidth and started broadcasting their web stream, which I think is pretty cool.
Vinny and I went out there and helped set up Free Radio Algiers. Originally as a 10-watt radio station, FM station. So it's gone through a few different
evolutions. Well, it's up and running. We have a rental car from the airport, and we keep it on that channel all the time.
That's
88.7. I actually don't know the website.
Great, 88.7.
Oh, there's a link from commongroundrelief.org.
Can you tell us about this massive solidarity effort in New Orleans with Common Ground, about where the volunteers are from and why they're there?
Like, who's here and why?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's people here there's a lot of people from the West Coast, from California, Oregon. A lot of people from Ohio, Illinois, St. Louis, Missouri, a lot of Milwaukee. It's funny, I haven't met a whole lot of people from the East Coast, but a lot of people have like gotten on trains and headed south or come in from the West Coast. And there's people here for so many different reasons. There's people here who you see at, like, you know, they're like this the whole crusty anarcho hippie punk activist crowd. There's people here who have never been consider themselves activists in their lives, but who were just really moved by the situation and just wanted to help rebuild, and are now, at least a couple that I've talked to, have decided to pretty much drop whatever they were doing before and just stay here indefinitely. And these are people who did not consider themselves political activists before. But there are people who are like Christians who want to help. There's all different kinds of people here.
Are there any other projects that are being planned for the future that you can let our listeners know about?
From Common Ground?
common ground
or
other things.
Yeah, I'm not so informed about other things right now. I know that this is definitely not the only game in town. Like, there's a women's reconstruction project that's unrelated. Acorn has stuff planned. I don't know the details on that. And then the new things that Common Ground is initiating but aren't fully up yet are, I think, the newspaper, preschool, and center, and pretty much just expanding what they're doing. I almost forgot. Anti-eviction is a very important thing, that goes both through legal channels and through direct actions. And there was a pretty interesting direct action that happened a couple days ago about that, and I have someone else here who can talk a little bit about that if you're interested.
Sure.
Okay, this is Sam. She's also from Santa Cruz. Here she is. Hello?
Hi, Sam. I just want to remind you and listeners that you are tuned to Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org, and we're speaking with Sam, a volunteer with the Common Ground Collective from Santa Cruz.
Yep.
And can you tell us a little bit about the anti-eviction solidarity work that you've been involved in?
Of course. So there's actually a huge anti-eviction movement going on right now in New Orleans because there have been a lot of illegal evictions by landlords, which means during the hurricane, the mayor of New Orleans said that nobody could be evicted if they paid up to September for their rent, and they couldn't be evicted from the time that they were out of the city of New Orleans, for obvious reasons. And what ended up happening was a lot of landlords broke that and violated that law and started evicting a lot of their tenants in order to bring in contractors and sell the buildings. So right now in New Orleans, as people are coming back, there's a flood of evictions going on. People are realizing that, you know, their landlords are telling them they need all their stuff out of their houses, and they don't have anywhere to go, realistically speaking. So the anti-eviction work it was actually a direct action that I went to with some other people here in New Orleans, and it was for a great man named Chief Al. And what we did was, his landlord owned a couple of local businesses in the French Quarter, one of which was Igor's Checkpoint Charlie, and his name is Igor. His real name is Igor. I didn't make that up. He's really evil Igor. And we went to his bar and passed out flyers to all the bar patrons telling them that their money was going to this man who did an illegal eviction. And Al actually came with us. He's about a 60, like older 60s, maybe early 70s, black man who's just this really powerful guy who wanted Igor to know that he had this posse behind him. And we went to the bar and informed the patrons and actually got a really great response from them. A lot of them actually left the bar with us during the action, and it was a success, and they've been doing direct actions like that for a while. It's kind of reminiscent of the 20s and the Communist Party. There's actually a funny incident, too, where the band that was playing there was actually from the West Coast, and it was their first gig in New Orleans, and they were terrified to see, like, all these really militant, you know, activists coming down and storming the bar and, you know, passing out flyers to their entire audience. And what ended up happening, though, was they were actually playing background music for our action as it was going on, as we had all these speakers speak, and finally they started making up words to their songs, like bring back Al's stuff and give Al back his home. And it was just a really funny incident, the best direct action I've been to so far. So that's just one example. But if anybody's interested, there's a lot. There are some activists down here from Oakland, actually, who do anti-eviction work in Oakland. I can't remember the name of the organization, but they're down here doing anti-eviction work. If anyone's interested in tapping into that, I know that they're also trying to do a lot of work to get New Orleans residents back in New Orleans. So that's another way we can help out in the Bay Area.
Keep up that creative solidarity. I had a question.
Uh-huh.
There's a video published on New Orleans Indie Media that I saw today, and we played on the air a little bit earlier, and you can hear a woman saying that she attempted to give the money to her landlord, and the landlord said that her money would not be accepted and that she had to leave. Have you heard reports about that as well?
Yeah, there's actually a lot of that going on specifically because a lot of the money that these tenants have received has been grants from FEMA to get, you know, a little bit of money. Not that FEMA is really helping, but the little bit that they can, they have given to these residents, and the residents have been attempting to give them to their landlords for the next few months' rent. But what's been happening is that a lot of the landlords have been meeting with private contractors that are actually asking them to give them their house. That way they can tear down huge plots of the Ninth Ward and build, like, you know, these amazing suburban houses for a completely different demographic. So landlords have been refusing money from their tenants, which, again, leaves the tenants with absolutely no possessions because their houses are completely destroyed, and also no hope for a physical property that they once owned because the landlords are, or that they once rented because the landlords are refusing money.
Is this something that they can legally do, is refuse their money?
You know, New Orleans isn't really a place of legality right now. There are a lot of loopholes in the way that the law has been written, because when the mayor wrote it, there, you know, it was in this, like, rapid sense of urgency, so they didn't really think through a lot of the landlord's policies that they made during that time. But yeah, I've heard actually multiple stories. I was talking to a friend who actually came down from Oakland, and he was telling me that he gets a lot of stories from people who have attempted to give their landlord money for this month and the next, like, 4 months, but the landlord's been refusing them. So,
are there lawyers that are involved with the campaign
as well as the
direct action work?
Yeah, there's a lot of legal channels. So if anybody listening to this has any experience with specifically landowners' rights and property information, they should definitely tap in, hopefully through this group in Oakland. And if I can remember the name, I'm sure we can relay it to you somehow, and I can get more information on that.
Well, maybe you can just tell our listeners finally how they could get involved in Common Ground relief work, mm-hmm. such as you did yourself.
Okay, there's a great website, commongroundrelief.org. It's a good place to tap into coming down here. There are also, like, I mean, Common Ground Relief, like, specializes in a lot of the stuff they need right now is physical labor. So there's, like Maya talked about earlier, a lot of gutting houses and a lot of these things, but that's a really great place to start, and they're a great catalyst for organizers coming out from out of town, especially people who, you know, feel like they need to be down here, like I did and like our Santa Cruz group did. And now that we're here, we can really plug into other groups, because a lot of the organizers from Common Ground know a lot of the organizers from around here. So commongroundrelief.org.
All right. Thanks, Sam. And you can ask Maya if she wanted to just wrap up with us as well.
Of course. Thanks, Bradley.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Maya again. People are very much encouraged to come down here. If you can give a little bit of time, a lot of time, whatever is much appreciated. But that if you are thinking about coming down, please check out Points to Consider for Visiting Activists. It's this long letter which was written and posted on New Orleans Indie Media. And it's really, really good about things to be aware of coming into somebody else's community and being respectful and just not being an invader who's, you know, exploitative. So I really recommend reading that if you're thinking about coming down.
We have a few minutes. Give us some examples of things that people need
to
be considered.
Well, like, you know, one guy I was talking to in the neighborhood was saying, I really appreciate you being here. You're here to work. And we had this great rapport. And he said, but I have to say, some of those people who came down over Thanksgiving, there was a big, huge, huge influx of people for this, you know, week of the caravan that was advertised. And he's like, and some of these people were just showing up in the neighborhood with their cameras. And he very much felt that they were, like, exploiting somebody else's misfortune as a voyeur. Or, you know, people who come in as very overbearing and deciding that they know how things should be done or how things should be, and not listening to what people are saying about how things have been, how they would like them to be, people who have lived here for a long time, you know, trying to come and listen to what's wanted and needed, not try to tell people what should happen.
All right. Well, that's a great way to wrap it up. Thanks a lot.
And
we'll make this audio available on New Orleans Indie Media and put a link to Points for Visiting Activists to Consider. So thanks a lot for your call. And send our best regards to the Common Ground Relief workers.
I will. All thank
right.
you.
All right, bye. So that was Maya, a programmer here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, calling in from New Orleans along with Sam.